appreciate that. I appreciate that introduction. And no, it's a great pleasure and privilege to be here with you today. We've done a number of these kinds of presentations over the years, and find that the best presentations aren't the ones that you look up at the screen and follow along with. It's actually the ones that ask questions, and because ultimately you come here today with questions that you perhaps want to have answered, and I may or may not cover them with this, and if I only get to part of this or only a little bit of it, that's okay. Just so long as your questions are answered, that's the most important thing. So by all means, if you have a question, if you don't feel like you're interrupting me, just raise your hand and we can discuss. So there's a lot of different jokes and things and cartoons about hearing loss. I've even got a few more coming up. But we'll move into the presentation. A few quotes about hearing and ears. I like a couple of them here, like this one. My wife says that I never listened to her. At least I think that's what she said. What other ones? Actually, some that are fairly thought-provoking. An untreated hearing loss is more noticeable than hearing aid, which is actually pretty true. There's some studies that go out. The National Institutes of Health do show that that as we age, the prevalence of hearing loss increases to the point that from 65 to 75, about a third of the American population, and we can probably presume that, probably worldwide, but at least the American population, a third of that group have hearing loss, whereas it increases to one in two people once you hit about 75 and older. And so it's fairly common disorder, if you would call that. Estimation of 28 million, I got looking at the little notation of where that came from. That was back in 1999, so you can imagine here 13 years later, I think it's up around 35 million. And of course, that's due to really start to increase more rapidly as a lot of the baby boomers are hitting 65 and older. And so, they estimate about, one in 10 Americans have hearing loss. So, let's see here. So, again, total population in Utah, again, approximately 10%, 9.2% of the population. This comes from the Bureau of Labor and Statistics, have hearing loss. Hearing loss, and we were kind of talking a little bit about this a little bit earlier when I walked in, that it is can create psychological and solitary confinement. Generally, people that have hearing loss, and I get this all the time, people that feel like they do okay. In fact, I remember just here this last week, had someone come in, felt like they did pretty well, and I can kind of get an idea. At least I try to paint a picture in my mind as to about where this person's hearing is. And the way she was talking, it kind of seemed like, well, maybe she had maybe sloping out in the high tones just a little more. But when the results came back in, I mean, she had a 50 to 60% hearing loss. It was pretty severe anyway. But once people kind of begin to notice that they're not hearing as well as they should, it really takes them 5, 6, 7, 8 years to actually do anything about it. It's nothing that it's really, from a life or death standpoint, we're not bleeding to death. It's not to the level of a heart attack or something like that. It's something that just generally gradually creeps up on us. And we do find a lot of people that are in denial, that feel like they have hearing loss, that are really otherwise anyway. So, at least in the pediatric population, and if untreated hearing loss, and I don't know if any of maybe none of you, but we actually, one of my main responsibilities coming down to St. George 14 years ago was to institute and start the infant hearing screening program at the hospital. Since then, we have tested, from my guesstimation, probably about 40,000 babies here in St. George since 1998. And each year, you know, we identify a handful. Statistics show that about 3 out of every 1,000 live births, there's some amount of hearing loss.
What do you do about them? I mean, if they find that they got hearing loss, what do you do when a kid's a brand new baby?
Yeah, so great question. What do we do with them? Well, we certainly try to identify, is it a permanent hearing loss due to nerve damage, which most of them is. Sometimes we identify kids that really develop fluid behind their ears fairly quickly, and we'll get them into an ear, nose, throat specialist if that's the case. But, we can identify infants as early as, in fact, I think the earliest one we identified, at least that I have, was, I think, 2.5 or 3 weeks old. We can actually, by the time they're about 3 months, we can actually fit them with hearing devices, and because the critical window for developing speech in infants is, not when they're 2 or 3, but it's actually when they're about, starting at about 6 months old. That's when their brain starts to learn the inflections of speech and words and sounds, and so that by the time they're about 18, 20 months, they're starting to gel that together. And if they miss that time window, their speech becomes delayed, and so ultimately there's delays in communication. Generally, those kids that have untreated hearing loss generally perform poor in school. Social isolation, generally lower self-esteem. Generally, they're not into the in crowd because they're obviously different to the other kids, and so poor peer perception. And so we can actually do quite a bit with kids with, as long as we identify them. And generally, those kids, providing the hearing isn't profoundly impaired, we can generally get a child that's developing speech and language very closely to their normal hearing peers, so long as we identify them early. So, of course, in adults, again, a lot of the same things. Social isolation, misdiagnosis of Alzheimer's or dementia, decreased vocational options. Generally, those that have significant hearing loss, generally from a wage standpoint, generally don't earn as much as the average wage earner. Paranoia, safety concerns, depression, so when we talk about these things in terms of, well, I'm not bleeding to death, or I'm not, I'm not having a heart attack. I mean, really, hearing loss can cause, in fact, I was looking at something the other day that, it even goes, generally increases stress levels. Cardiovascular function. I mean, there's a lot of things that it can affect that can, ultimately end up resulting in, and poor health. Higher rates of divorce, is that what I heard? You don't know how many times I have had couples come into me and say, you know what? This is our last straw. If you can't help us, we're splitting ways. And it's kind of like, wow, it really kind of puts you on the spot to really make things happen. But it, can affect marriage and relationship.
So send them for hearing test.
New counseling technique, right?
Don't go any farther. Watch your hearing evaluation.
So Helen Keller, of course, she's famous for being, the blind and deaf lady that really accomplished a tremendous amount in her life, and we respect and are standing off for the challenges that she overcame in her life. But she, and we quote this to people, the top paragraph: the problems of deafness are deeper and more complex, if not more important, than those of blindness. Deafness is a much worse misfortune, for it means the loss of the most vital stimulus, the sound of the voice that brings language, sets thoughts astir, and keeps us in the intellectual company of man. Blindness separates us from things, but deafness separates us from people. And so that was from her perspective. Another one from Beethoven, that really, if it wasn't for his art of music, that, I don't know if many of you knew that he was severely hearing impaired. And of it wasn't for his love of music and the great things that he accomplished there, you know, it would have been to the death of him. So I know that there were some of the questions kind of wanting to know about, you know, hearing instruments and how they've evolved over the years. I mean, yeah, back 100 years ago, they used to have the ear horns, and it's kind of amazing how they would try to become creative back then. In fact, I have a lot more pictures that show, like, the farmer with his hoe had developed a, you know, so that if he's out in the fields and needed to hear, it was kind of built right into his hoe or his rake where he'd lift it up.
And now so, what do? They put it right in your seat in your car so you can feel the vibration.
Yeah, that's right. So, of course, they used to be bigger devices. The one down in the center bottom is a cochlear implant. Technologies today, we have some of your traditional behind-the-ear devices that are obviously a lot smaller, the completely in the canal devices that go deep down in, that, you know, for those that are really cosmetically conscious, we've got devices that fit deep down in the ear. Of course, the more common, or the probably the most preferred, at least from a comfort standpoint, are these tiny ones that go up and over the ear with a little wire.
I thought the stud was part of it.
Yeah, so they typically tend to be the some of the most comfortable. Plus, they don't plug up your ear like some of the traditional custom ear molded type. So they're comfortable for that reason. Cosmetics, they're great. But again, we have devices for kids. This one up here is what we call a Baha, a bone anchored hearing aid. So that's kind of a unique device. There are some people that have hearing loss, but it's not a nerve hearing loss. So we basically have hearing loss due to our three primary types of hearing loss. We have, in the most common form, is nerve hearing loss, just over age and time, or maybe genetically, we were born with hearing loss that affects the function of the nerve. That's the most common type. The second most common, which occurs in about 5% of the population, is what we call a conductive hearing loss. And that's simply, how many of you had ear infections as a child with fluid behind the ears? Well, that probably caused some hearing loss, but it didn't affect the nerve, at least at that point in your life. And so that's called a conductive hearing loss. And then there's a combination of the two, where you can have some nerve hearing loss, but then on top of that, you can have this conductive loss where there's fluid that builds behind the eardrum, or a hole in the eardrum. Or, in fact, I saw a lady just before coming over here today. She has a condition called otosclerosis, which is a stiffening of the little ear bones. And so she had those surgically replaced, and which actually caused an improvement in the hearing on the one side by about 25%. So anyway, several different types of hearing loss, but that Baha are for those that generally don't have much, or maybe just a very little amount of nerve hearing loss, but have a conductive loss, a permanent conductive loss on top of that. So what is done, there's a physician here in town that we work with that actually goes in and they kind of peel back some of the skin here on the mastoid bone, and they don't drill all the way through, but they just drill a little divot where they put in a little metal titanium stub, and then after 3 months of healing, then we can program and snap on this bone oscillating hearing device. And those people that wear it, that have this particular hearing loss condition, report remarkable results of being able to hear good and clear with that type of device. Now, it's not for everyone, because like I say, 90 to 95% of those that have hearing loss is nerve hearing loss, which is better helped with the traditional, over-the-ear type. Anyway, little kids, that again is going to be another bone conduction type of device. Kids that are born with malformities of the ear and so on. Anyway, so we kind of talked a little bit about this. Some of the problems of hearing aids, years ago, and not to say that we may not have to address some of these issues, but they're not nearly as prevalent as they used to be. I mean, of course, cosmetics and visibility, the size of the devices, the occlusion, what we mean by occlusion and insertion hearing loss. Again, when we take a custom impression to take a to make a custom hearing aid, like this little device right here, we're basically plugging up the ear canal so that, I mean, we're basically, yeah, plugging up that, the ear canal channel with this device. And the occlusion is the feeling or the effect that you get when you close off your ear. You tend to feel a little more hollow or like your head's in a tunnel or a barrel. Anyway, with those open ear devices, that greatly diminishes that occlusion effect. Whistling and feedback, you know, if you've sat next to someone in your, you know, your church or anywhere that has a hearing aid, that sometimes they whistle and scream at you. Years ago, that it was a little bit harder to, you know, to deal with. But nowadays, with the software that we program these things with, they actually have feedback algorithms in them so that while you may hear a little bit of whistling, generally within a second or so, it'll diminish out as the mechanism kicks in to kind of attack and get rid of it. So anyway, whistling and feedback really isn't much of an issue anymore. And sometimes it's just simply the fact that if someone has this type of a device, maybe there's earwax building up in the ear canal, and maybe it's simply just cleaning out their ear to open up that channel so that that sound doesn't hit and bounce back like it would.
I think one of my friends needs new hearing aids then. Every Saturday night while we're playing cards, hers are always whistling and doing things.
Well, she may need some new ones if they're an older type. However, sometimes the things that I look for first is there earwax in the ear canal? Is it fitting in the ear canal as snug as it used to over time? I mean, really, the two things that continue to grow, unfortunately, as we age, other than maybe our midline, which mine tends to a little bit each year. Anyway, is our noses and our ears, just the cartilage. And so sometimes after, 3, 4, 5 years, the devices just don't sit in as snug as they used to. A good snug fit will help minimize or eliminate this whistling or feedback. And so I kind of look for those, some of these things that I can easily correct if they're getting good sound quality and it's otherwise functioning fine. Then it's just a matter of solving one of these other problems. But if we verify that all those other issues are fine, then yeah, maybe it is some sort of an internal wiring component or something that's, it's deteriorating and
well,
may need to be replaced.
I have 4 good friends with hearing aids, but my father-in-law, and then 3 friends, and every one of them is constantly having problems with their hearing aids. The batteries go dead really fast, they whistle, they can't hear, they're constantly adjusting. Is there one hearing aid that's any better than the other? Or does it all depend on the person?
I think a lot of it depends upon the person. In fact, that was one of the questions that was emailed, was that, people get hearing instruments, and after a little while, it seems like they aren't as motivated to wear them. And I think it's a combination of factors. I think some people, and I try to educate my patients that that this isn't something where you're just going to go in and buy it and never come in again. I mean, if we went into, St. George Ford and drove off with a new car and we never took it back in for service and follow-up, you may end up burning up an engine pretty quick you may not end up getting the life out of it. And I think for some people to go back in on maybe 4 to 6 months to have them cleaned and checked and coming in for their annual test and having us check and readjust things. For some people, as they get into it, it's just, maybe a little bit of an inconvenience. And so part of it is maybe a motivation issue. Part of it, it could be the fact that, we're never going to restore your hearing back to normal. I mean, it's almost like, some people come in and they're like, I can go into my optometrist and I can get my pair of glasses and I can see well, but when I go in to get my hearing aids and I'm just, it's helpful, but it's just still not quite there. And that's, And that's true, and the reason being is that we're trying to, I mean, can you imagine the optometrist that fit 95% of his patients with glasses who had macular degeneration? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of what it's like. I mean, glasses aren't going to take out those, you know, those black spots or the reduced peripheral vision. I mean, it's going to help kind of maximize what you have there. And that's kind of what hearing aids are, is that we're trying to maximize the nerve function that's left, but there's still going to be some of those, you know, nerves that we're just not going to be able to replace or replicate, and so therefore we're, you know, we're going to make an improvement, but we're not going to make it like it, you know, was when you were, you know, a teenager. So there's a combination of things, but...
Is it true that if you need hearing aids and you put off doing it for a long time, that your brain kind of forgets how to listen?
Nerd.
So did everyone hear that question?
That's old age. Yeah.
Well, you know, there are some studies that are coming out now. It seems like there's a lot that are coming out as hearing loss relates to dementia and Alzheimer's and function of the brain and so on. And we have found and understood through some of these recent studies in the last couple of years, last 5 years, that that our hearing nerves, it's kind of a... you know, use it or lose it. I mean, hearing aids are not going to prevent hearing loss from going down quicker than it would, and it's not going to, of course, it's not going to damage your hearing quicker, but we find that those that would qualify for hearing instruments, you know, whenever that is, let's just pull out of the sky, let's say at 65, they had measurable hearing loss that would require hearing aids. Generally, those people that are fit at 65, now we fast forward 10 years to 75, as an average, are going to do better because they've been exercising that, you know, their ears that have been weakened because of the hearing loss, and their ability to understand words is going to be better than someone that we start fitting at 75, whose brain's been weakened as due to lack of activity, I guess, for the lack of better words. And so therefore, long term, people that are fit earlier on tend to do better later on in life rather than, you know, coming in at 85 or 90. And not to say that we can't help, we can, but generally their ears have a little bit harder time accepting the sound and how it is and just simply understanding had they come in, you know, 10, 15, 20 years earlier.
Man, I should have gotten hearing aids from my husband 10 years ago.
Yeah, well... Of course, it's never too late to start, but that's, you know, but it is kind of a somewhat of a use it or lose it principle, yeah, to a degree. Is there any other questions regarding that? Yeah.
A little different. Would you speak to the problem of not being able to understand words?
Not being able to understand words. Yes. In fact, let me just escape out of this. Pull it up here real quick. There we go. Yeah, so that not understanding words, we refer to those as sound voids. Sound voids are basically... are moments of time when we lack clarity or understanding. And so, let me pull this up and it'll... So a sound void is a moment of time lacking clarity or understanding, or it's basically empty space in one's life caused by the absence of sound clarity. And so what happens is when you have hearing loss... So let's say up here is good across the frequency spectrum, and if I have hearing loss and it drops down, there are certain ranges where I'm just not hearing sounds. It's common. Most hearing loss that's nerve-related is better in the low tones, and it slopes and drops down and becomes worse in the high tones. Well, the higher tones, the treble range, contains all of the sounds like S's and F's and TH's and those really critical consonant sounds that that help us... you know, understand the beginning and endings of words. And when we're missing those, normally these sound voids happen, and so this is what is created. So when we have an incoming sound come in, the word catch, we may only understand cat. Or wife becomes transposed to white. I think there's one more. Rose becomes road. I mean, just some of those subtleties that when we miss them, our brain fills it in. You know, sometimes we guess right. Sometimes we fake it until we make it. We come out okay. But sometimes when we're not sure and we fake and we guess, you know, sometimes we
that's
don't
laughable.
Come out okay. So the conversation becomes really interesting.
Yes.
Point.
An example, I confused feather and better not too long ago over the phone.
So you experienced the sound void. That's exactly what that is.
So if you experience that, because I do that too sometimes, mm-hmm. and that's the only symptom you seem to have that you know of, because, you know, nobody's told you you're deaf, should you go be checked out?
Those are one of the signs, and again, we pride ourselves on the fact that we don't try to push people into hearing instruments before they're ready. And so that is one of those soft signs that, you know, if you're starting to, you know, misinterpret what people are saying, or you're like, oh, wow, they said something and I just didn't quite get it. I mean, that could be a sign. And, yeah, we would recommend that you come in for at least an initial, hearing test. And we can say, yeah, you know, wow, it's worse than maybe what you think. Or maybe it's just like, yeah, you know, maybe you've just got a precursor mild loss that wouldn't, you know, be as benefited from hearing instruments at this point, but maybe let's keep track of it on an annual or every other year basis or something. So, yeah.
Well, if you got a husband that says he's not deaf, just that you don't talk well.
Yeah, and I know that
maybe
question
mumbling.
Was
yeah, mumbles.
Was given
yeah.
in the back. Yeah, you have a spouse that says they don't have a hearing loss, and it's all our fault. In fact, my business partner, he writes an article. In fact, those of you that have that read the senior sampler on a fairly regular basis, a couple of months ago, he resurrected this article that's titled "Why Women Mumble When They Talk." So, of course, it kind of gets the ire up of these ladies that read it, and then they begin to read that. Well, it's normally their spouse is complaining of the same thing. Well, it's got to be them; they're mumbling, when in reality, because of their hearing loss. They're just not hearing some of those softer, subtler sounds that...
Probably
wouldn't
want to hear it anyway.
Perhaps.
That's called selective hearing.
Yeah. But there are some people that we know that there's hearing loss because you walk into the room and, you can hear the TV before you even get into the house. Just blaring loud and, they're waking up the neighbors and... And yet there are some of those folks that just simply won't accept the fact that they're the ones that have the problem. And frankly, I wish we had a silver bullet that would say, you know what, if you just did this, this would sweeten them up and get them in to get some help. But my experience is until they're really mentally ready and can see how it's not only, until they can really see how it's affecting other people, it may not be affecting them. I have some people, it doesn't bother me. But that's really only half the ball game. I mean, it's really the spouse and the family members and those in their social groups that are the ones that, are being impacted by it. And until we can get them and help them to see that, the old adage, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. And there's just some of these folks that we've even had come in that have been drug in by their spouse, you need to get something, and they're just sitting there resisting with all their will. I mean, we've actually sent people home that would otherwise qualify in every other way for hearing devices, but have just said, until you really see what impact it's making beyond yourself, we're going to sell you this set of devices, and, in a week or two or a month, they're going to end up in the drawer, and then what good is that? And so, anyway.
Would you talk just a little bit about what causes nerve damage? Because, is it true that loud music can damage those nerves?
Yes.
And what can we do to protect the nerves that we have? Since you said you don't cure that, you just mm-hmm. help. But how do we preserve our nerves?
That's a great question. Yeah, what causes nerve hearing loss? Well, we talked about a few things. Genetics. I mean, there, you know, some people are predisposed at having hearing loss as a result of their genetic pool, although I would say that, and I don't have any numbers to support this, but my gut feeling is that of all the kids that we test here at the hospital, that probably at least half, probably 50% of them that have hearing loss at birth are born to parents that are that have normal hearing. And so sometimes it's kind of, you know, genes mutate, but, you know, so genetics can be a factor. Noise exposure is probably the biggest factor beyond congenital hearing loss. People that have been around firearms, have been around machinery and equipment for most of their life, generally are greater likelihood of hearing loss than those that are in an office job. There are certain hospital-grade antibiotics. Some people become really sick. They get into the hospital. They need these hospital-grade antibiotics, gentamicin, vancomycin, and there's kind of a whole host of myosin type of drugs that, given in strong doses, can affect hearing. But the alternative is you don't. You know, you could lose your life. So anyway, that's kind of a different story. But it could be certain antibiotics, strong antibiotics. There are, other toxic things. Of course, disease of the ear can get in. Viruses, you know, we see probably 3 or 4 people, persons a month that will come in due to sudden hearing loss. And it could be due to an inflammation of the hearing nerve. But a lot of the times it ends up becoming what we presume is probably a virus that gets in and within hours will knock hearing down 50%. Auditory nerve tumors can be another thing that knock out hearing. So a lot of different things. And that's kind of, you know, what we do is to help try to pinpoint a little bit further as to, or closer as to, you know, what the reason is. So, yeah, great question.
I like Doc Martin. Doc Martin is an English program. Mm-hmm. And when I watch it with my wife on her television, half of the time I don't understand what they're saying. But if I go back and listen to the recording, I can understand the whole thing. Is there any...
So recording versus the live program. I don't know. I mean, this may indirectly answer it.
First of all, you don't understand the English.
Well, yeah, I mean, I know that, you know, certain accents, I mean, are just, I mean, even for a normal hearing person, I mean, a British accent or an Australian, which is pretty much a British accent, you know, can be more difficult. When we have hearing loss on top of that, it makes it even harder to understand. But again, why you're listening to one program live and then pull up that same thing recorded a month later and can hear it better, I don't know if it has anything to do with the recording or the live broadcast quality versus now once they get in and they fine-tune and manipulate the signal and the video, whether that improves it some. You know, I have a patient that's been in the last 6 months that I fit with hearing loss, but he's done a lot of work for Hollywood with a lot of the movies and TV programs, and just in a regular average movie today that's being produced, because of the ease of which they can dub in, you know, of course there's the video visual effects, but then there's also sound effects. In an average movie, they'll have probably 500 to 1,000 different layers of audio that go over the regular recording. In fact, he says, if you're watching a movie and you have people in this, two people talking in the scene, and one goes to cross his leg, there's a sound effect for that that they dub in there. Whereas before, in the older movies, you know, if you pull up like an old John Wayne movie or Casablanca or one of these, you know, older classical movies, because of the difficulty of, you know, the analog, the way they put them all together, they would put in sound effects for some of the major events that were happening, but not every jot and tittle thing. And he says that in today's, with the ease of being able to drag and drop sounds throughout the movie to give it this rich experience, it's just you have so much sound on top of sound that a lot of people, frankly, struggle in theaters and... you know, that have hearing loss, and it's, you know, and even sometimes even with their hearing instruments, and I you know, I know in our office it's kind of like, you know, it's not really your fault or the fault of the devices. It's just all this stuff they put into the movie to make it an experience for the teenagers, the 20 years old, I mean, the 20s and 30s something, and even my, you know, the 40s. You know, that's kind of the group that they're making these movies for, and they're really not making blockbuster movies for 70-year-olds, unfortunately. I mean, that's not their main driving population of people. Even though we know that, you know, you folks go to them periodically, I mean, they know that their main group are these younger people, and so, but unfortunately, all the stuff they do to them makes it more difficult to pick up on the dialogue. Anyway, so.
I have a suggestion for you, Wayne. My husband, we have several DVDs and whatnot that are British English. Turn on the closed captioning.
I don't read fast enough.
No. It's just a quick flip. It won't interfere with your enjoyment, and when you can understand what they have said, it's so much nicer.
Are those on all TVs?
Yeah. Most programs, almost every, you know, it's usually in your remote. You can program it. There's usually a little button that says.
It's always just a little later than the spoken, though.
Oh, yeah.
It drives me nuts.
Because most television shows that are, you know, produced, even though it may be the, you know, you're in the whatever season of, I mean, yeah, you can turn on the closed caption, it'll come right up. News programs, I think they have closed caption, but it's a little bit delayed.
Yeah.
But yeah, most programs, even DVD player discs that you put in, you can select the closed caption
option. Well, I find the DVDs are a lot better because they're
right
imposed.
In sync.
They're
with
imposed. They're right in sync with when they're speaking. Whereas if you're watching a live news broadcast, it's usually several seconds behind because someone is actually
typing.
Madly typing up on the screen. Yeah.
And misspelling some words.
One teacher did an interesting experiment to teach us how our senses are interrelated. Mm-hmm. And she gave us a sheet of paper, 8x10. That had nothing but gobbledygook on it. I mean, it had letters on it, but you couldn't read it. And nobody in the class could read it. Then we had to put that down, and we listened to a DVD, which was nothing but gobbledygook. You could not understand it. And then she said, now I want you to read the paper as you listen to the, you know, to the recording, and you could read it. You could hear it. And she said, that is how interrelated things are. And we couldn't believe it. We had to hear that again, you know, to make sure it really was gobbledygook, you know. But, you know, it was very, very interesting how your sight helps your hearing and your hearing helps your sight.
Yeah,
it was amazing.
Yeah, you know, and I think people that begin to develop hearing loss unknowingly, I mean, I think they tend to become, you know, more lip readers. And I think unconsciously, you know, look at lips more, you know, it's amazing how much you can pick up, even though maybe you're not getting everything, just by looking at someone's lips helps. And you know, that's kind of one of the signs, you know, that one of the questions that we ask, do you feel fatigued or tired after carrying on a long conversation with someone? It's just that if someone has to sit and really concentrate on their lips, I mean, that can become fatiguing after a period of time. And so, anyway. But yeah, sight and vision, that does work together.
We've been to the last two celebrity concert series, and I find the volume is horrendously loud.
Yes, amen and
I
amen.
I my hearing aids off.
Really?
And it's still too loud. Mm-hmm. What, I think you can't answer this probably, but why is it so loud? Are they trying to compensate for those that don't quite hear as well?
Well, we have a special secret contract with them that we have to pay them a lot of money so that they can deafen the community. Yeah, you know, I don't know, and I don't know if there's OSHA regulations against how loud things should be, but I mean, undoubtedly, I mean, if it's causing pain and discomfort, I mean, I think that ought to be something that is brought up with their sound engineer.
We won't even.
He's dead.
The last one was called the piano guy.
Piper.
Just the guy playing the piano, but it was so loud that it was magnified.
It's hard.
Maybe the only one.
church.
Yeah, maybe they're thinking you're doing a lot of good. You know, the thing is, I mean, when we develop hearing loss, our tolerances for, I mean, the natural inclination would be, well, gee, we need to turn it up for these folks so they can hear. But in reality, the loudness that we can tolerate as a normal hearing person is the same at which we can tolerate, you know, as we develop hearing loss. In other words, our range from normal to very loud may be a 100 decibel spread from very soft to very loud, but a hearing impaired person that has hearing loss, maybe their spread from very soft to very loud is only 30 decibels, but their maximum tolerances are at about the same level. And so oftentimes, you know, those that have nerve hearing loss, like a baby screaming or a door slamming, actually ends up becoming a little more startling and actually a little more painful than someone that has normal hearing. Not because of tolerance levels, but it's just their range from soft to loud is kind of, it's been distorted. And so anyway, I think it's just a matter of going in and seeing if they can turn the thing down. But
now answer me this really good question.
Okay.
Can you get a decent hearing aid for a reasonable price?
Yes. Go see him.
Because our insurance does not cover hearing aids for my husband. And he says we can't afford hearing aids. He knows he needs them.
Yeah.
He knows he needs them.
You know, that's kind of the thing that we try to, you know, to educate people on is that, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's out there. We get our devices solely from kind of your global top-tier level manufacturers, but yet they offer us devices that are very conservative to the consumer, going up to, you know, you can spend $4,000, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 on a set of devices, but we have a lot of great new technology that has come out that's, you know, much more conservatively priced. And so, you know, there's kind of this myth out there that, well, gee, if I want to, you know, because my budget's tight, well, gee, I need to go to Costco or someplace to get them, when in reality, when you go there or these other, again, I don't want to sound like a mudslinging, but some of the, you know, the Miracle Ears and some of these well-known brands, I mean, a lot of the devices that they use are normally anywhere from 2 to 4 years old in technology, because the manufacturers that make them, i.e. the ones that we use direct, they're the ones that make all of those hearing aids. And normally they are going to allow those companies to have them after they've kind of run the gamut. And so normally what you get from those outfits are devices that are technologically speaking 2 to 4 years old. And so, sure, you know, when you go into Costco, they're going to say, well, gee, you don't need to spend any more than $2,500 or $3,000 on a set, because our premium is only that. You know, you don't need to spend more. But in reality, when you buy their premium, you're getting technology that's already about 4 years old. Yeah, well, I've got some packets and, oh, it's got my screensaver. Anyway, so that's kind of the thing. You know, through our office, we have devices that really fit anybody's budget. I mean, if people that are on fixed incomes, we've got solutions for them. If we have some people that just want the cream of the crop, the newest thing that came out last week, well, we've got that too.
Do you have the lyric? Isn't that one of the newest ones that's just...
Okay, yeah, the lyric.
My husband's very interested in that one.
Here's a story on lyric.
Is it?
Here's the story on lyric. So lyric is a device that actually is placed down in the ear canal. It operates off of its own internally built battery that lasts approximately 3 months. So you put it down in your ear canal, you don't have to remove it for 3 months. Unlike all of the other type of devices where you're changing them out, you know, once a week or once every couple of weeks. So this lyric, it's small. We have fit them in the past. We haven't done it as much currently, and I'll tell you why, but not to say that he still couldn't get it, I found that of all those that were eligible for hearing devices, they would normally only, you know, I could only qualify about 40%, 30% of my patients to get those, because number one, ear canals that are more oval than round, or too small, or too short, or too oily or waxy, or anyone that's on, they say anyone that's on blood thinners, Coumadin, things like that, they're contraindicated for getting them. So there's actually kind of a smaller population. But then the other thing I found is that they're actually fairly, over time, they tend to be fairly expensive because you're purchasing them on a subscription basis. So in other words, you're basically just renting hearing aids. So for this year, it goes in annual increments. You're spending about $3,200 to $3,400 per yearly subscription. And then during that year, you come in, and as they die, we remove them, we put in two new ones, and send you out the door at no additional cost. That $3,200, $3,300 gets you your replacements through that year. But if you times that by the average life of a hearing device, 5-6 years, that's $15,000, $16,000, $17,000, where, a regular set of devices, your upfront may be the same or a little more, but then that lasts you, 5, 6, 7, 8 years, whatever. And so cost, I found, was probably one of the most prohibitive things for people. I know that Lyric wanted us to just put them on them and get them out the door, let them wear them, and then they'll be convinced. And I just felt like, I want to be upfront with people, let them know what they're into it. And so that was one reason. But then another thing that we're currently not doing it is that they were bought up by one of the big manufacturers here not too long ago, and they said, okay, if you want to continue to dispense Lyric, you're going to have to do X number of new sets a month, or we're going to bill them for them anyway.
No,
and
great.
So we kind of got thinking, you know what, we don't want a manufacturer dictating what we do and for our patients. And so we said, you know what, until you change your policy, we're going to continue to service the people that are in their subscriptions, but we're not going to fit anyone new until they change their policy. Maybe they never will, and maybe there's someone here in town that is, on board with them and doing it. I haven't heard of anyone, so. But it's a great concept, and you can shower with them, and they're really more of a hands-free approach. A lot of people have done well with them, but there are some.
Putting a battery in every week is no big deal. I mean, come on.
Yeah, there's even some that we can get that have that come with rechargeable batteries that you can throw them in a little carriage to recharge them through the night, and then you're off and going. And so, there's even rechargeable battery options.
If we could remember that, we could remember a whole lot of things.
We're in the process in the near future of installing a T-coil. Would you like to speak to that a little bit about that system?
Yeah, so from what I know a little bit
already.
About what is being looked into, and you probably know about that more than I do, but there are, for bigger facilities, they can be kind of, I don't know if retrofit's the word, but they can be fit with a couple of different amplifying kind of systems. The one that I think you're currently looking into is what they call a loop system, which can be installed in a bigger room like this, or in your sanctuary, or in a chapel, or movie theater, or whatever, so that those people whose hearing aids have a T-coil or a telecoil, they can switch into that telecoil program, and it'll pick up the audio that'll be piped right into their devices. The thing with a lot of hearing aids today is that a lot of them have telecoils, but sometimes they're not actually activated. Maybe I'm breaking HIPAA law here, but with Missy here, she's one of my patients. I guess she admitted that earlier. Her devices, I haven't activated the telecoil in it, but her looking at it without me being around probably would have thought, well, and you go and you listen to it. Well, gee, I don't hear the telecoil sound coming from it, so gee, it must not. Well, the fact is that all I have to do is have her come in, I can plug them in, I can activate that program, and it would work for hers. And I suspect that a lot of hearing aids that have been fit in the last 3 to 5 years, that may be the case, is that more of them probably have them than they know, but it may just be that program needs to be activated in them. So that's the one issue, but it's really a hands-free, boom, you put it into the telecoil setting, and you just, whoever's talking into the microphone, you pick up on it great.
Echo impulses are just disadvantages.
Yeah, you know, that's what I find with a lot
depends on who's speaking.
Yeah, with a lot of these systems, I mean, there are some advantages and disadvantages. With
we're
that
singing.
System, we actually had our I mean, each of our offices in our office, each of us have a consulting office. A few years back, we had each of those looped, and when you were inside, it was great, but we found that there were some dead spots, kind of depending on the, you know, if you were running it up against, you know, some metal studs or door frames, kind of present some problems. And so it's, you know, and again, I'm not an expert installer. I know there's a guy in California. His name is Bill Dials. He's an audiologist. He's retrofit thousands of homes there, and that's one of his selling points with hearing instruments. And I'm sure that he could give you a lot more information on it. Yeah, so anyway, so there's that. But then there's also, Michael, every LDS chapel here, I'm a member of the LDS church, they have FM systems, which, again, sound quality, you know, it may not be quite as good as the loop system, although those, you have your portable boxes
we
with a little
that.
Wire.
We have one.
Okay, so you've got that, so you're aware of that. So there's a few different options, and those can be, some of my patients that are LDS, actually they can get their own box with a little neck loop that you plug into that box. They can put it around their neck, so they're creating their own little mini loop system, and then they just turn their hearing aids to the telecoil position, and then they're able to pick up on what's coming from the pulpit. So, I mean, there's a few different options, and I wish there was one that was perfect, but anyway, yeah. So, any other questions? I think we've covered about everything in there, and so.
Well, we certainly thank you.
Thanks for having me, and I've got a couple packets of information. I've got my card if you want to take it. If you ever want to come in for a consultation, we do those for free. Most hearing tests, by the way, most hearing tests, because we're a medical audiology office, those are generally can be billed and covered by your insurances. But yeah, I'd be happy to talk or take more time either later or by appointment to visit with you about any concerns.
Thank you.
Thank you.